Okay, Alexander, let's discuss what's happening in Europe with the COVID-19 virus and the financial meltdown in Europe. Specifically, let's focus on the EU. Let's touch upon Italy, what's going on in Italy, and let's also talk about Germany, which is the de facto EU leader, the most powerful country economically in the European Union, and they call the shots for the most part. They call the shots as to what's happening in Europe. If you could say that someone calls the shot, because right now, Alexandra, I'm kind of feeling like all of Europe is adrift. I mean, there's absolutely no leadership from the core Brussels technocrat oligarch kleptocrats. And because the core has no real leadership and the periphery so hollowed out, it seems that every country's kind of, you know, just drifting, you know, in this sea called Corona and just getting swamped by the waves. Anyway, Alexander, what's your take on what's going on now?
Well, I think this is exactly right. Let's deal with the core. Let's deal with the EU and its institutions, the EU Commission, the European Council, all of these entities. They are in complete silence. They are in lockdown. There's no EU policy on what to do with COVID-19, with the coronavirus. There's no proposals from the EU that are being sent out to the member states on how they should respond. There is no real policy by the European Central Bank. There's been no meetings of the European Council. I mean, if ever there was a situation that seemed to call to my mind for a meeting of the European Council, that's the leaders of the various EU states coming together to agree a joint position on something. Well, here is a threat, an existential threat, supposedly, threatening the entire population of the European Union, with Italy already in lockdown, Spain fast moving in that direction, Germany only a little way behind, France already looking, the situation they're looking very bad. This is a crisis which, if the EU meant anything, one would expect the European Council to be meeting urgently to agree a common position on what to do. It's not meeting. And the reason it's not meeting is because there is no agreement between the EU leaders on what they should do. And as you correctly say, there, what's happened is that by default, it's been left to the governments of the member states. The political leadership of these governments has been completely hollowed out over the last 30 or so years, as the EU has centralized authority in itself and has worked to hollow out governments in the member states. So, you know, strong politicians, strong leaders, as we've discussed many times, are not really wanted in the member states, and there aren't any. And the result is that we have different countries taking different policies. Italy, as I said, has a lockdown policy. Spain is moving that way. France may be moving that way very soon. Germany, it's all over the place. No real policy, because Merkel isn't really doing very much either, and seems to be admitting that it's going to spread to 70% of the population. But even where governments are acting, they're not acting in a very vigorous way. And I say that even of Italy. I understand that, you know, publicly, Italy has, you know, announced all of these various policies, its quarantine places, its locking down movements, it's doing all of these things. And that sounds impressive. And I believe that the Italian people themselves are acting with actual, you know, dignity and discipline in response to this. But the government isn't there. We're not looking at a situation like we saw with Wuhan, where the Chinese government rushed medics from all over all over Italy or all over Europe to particular hotspots in Italy. We don't see hospitals being created. We don't see massive testing regimes. And Italy perhaps lacks the resources to do those things by itself. So it's looked to its EU allies for help. And what does it get? No help at all. So it needs respirators, apparently. There aren't enough respirators in Italy. So they went to the Germans and asked for help because Germany is a major country that makes respirators. And the Germans said, no, we are now passing a law which says medical equipment like that must remain in Germany. So, you know, the Italians are very upset because they're not getting the kind of EU solidarity that they were expecting.
Well, every man for himself right now.
It's every man, every woman, every country for itself, except none of them are doing it very well. And on the subject of respirators, Italy has received some respirators. They didn't come from Germany. They came from China. So there you are. It's not they're getting more help in that respect from China, you know, the adversary country, the place that we're supposed to be careful about because, you know, they're going to challenge us in this, all these sort of ways. And we mustn't touch their mobile phone providers and all that sort of thing, or go with their 5G policies. But Germany, which is, of course, as you said, the de facto leader of the EU, well, that's not helping Italy, it's helping itself. I'm not opposed to countries, I want to make this very clear, being first and foremost concerned about the livelihoods of their own people. That is the priority of every government. But consider the propaganda we've been hearing from the EU for all these years about how, you know, all these countries have allegedly pooled their sovereignty so, you know, they can all stand together and, you know, the collective is greater, you know, the whole is greater than its parts. And, you know, and it's taken the coronavirus to expose what a complete sham that is.
Not for me, Alexander. Well, I lived through Greece, I lived through Cyprus, and yeah. I'm going to make a comment and I want you to elaborate on it. The EU was never, has never been, and will never be about solidarity, no matter what they say. It's always been about subjugation.
Well, it has. I mean, anybody who knows the situation in Southern Europe, in Greece, in Cyprus. I mean, Cyprus had its entire banking system destroyed by the EU. And I remember how
it was. For 10 billion euros, exactly. They opted, instead of giving 10 billion euros to Cyprus, instead they bailed out Ukraine. They gave it to Ukraine and they left Cyprus to fend for itself. It's never been about solidarity. The EU has always been a pariah organization. It's been about destroying the member states, not strengthening them. And now we're seeing the fruits of the evils that they have sowed in Brussels.
Exactly. What happened? Let's just actually talk about Cyprus, because I think Cyprus is in some ways the most interesting case study. Cyprus is a country which has developed a very strong financial sector. There were problems, not insuperable problems, with two Cypriot banks, the Bank of Cyprus and Laiki Bank. And what the EU did was that it said that people holding accounts in every bank in Cyprus needed to give some of that money in those accounts to support Laiki and Bank of Cyprus. So they took a problem in two banks and they made it systemic for the entire banking system. I mean, they literally went out of their way to try and destroy the entire banking system. Now, the people of Cyprus, the parliament of Cyprus, the government of Cyprus rejected this insane plan. But the warning was given, and the result was, and it comes directly to this issue of subjugation that you say, Cyprus, which had developed a very effective position of its, for itself as a financial center, had to restrict the kind of people, the kind of countries that it did business with. I'm not talking about drugs money or arms money or, you know, slush funds or anything like that. I'm talking about ordinary work, the kind of things that financial centers do. And that basically meant that they had to limit their dealings with Russia. So that was what that was all about, ultimately. That was why they smashed Cyprus. And that's why they've done it this with all these other countries. If you look at Greece, which is the other country which I know, because obviously I am Greek, Greece was obliterated because, yes, the Greek government did borrow massively. But the Greek government also, on top of that borrowing, it had to bail out its own banks, which, of course, all of the EU was doing, because it was in the middle of the financial crisis and the banking system everywhere was in serious trouble. What then happened is, because Greece found itself in a very difficult situation, some of its creditors were banks in Germany and France.
Deutsche Bank. And BNP.
And BNP, absolutely. And it instead of accepting that the creditors, in other words, the Deutsche Bank, had done all sorts of, you know, absurd things, because there's always responsibility by the lender also in these situations. What happened was the entire burden was thrown upon Greece, and Greece was kept in this appalling cage, which it is still in, because these bailouts that were given to Greece, you give money to a bankrupt country, which is what Greece essentially is, you just kind of keep them in bankruptcy forever. And that's what they did to Greece. It helped Deutsche Bank and BNP get out of their problems then. It helped Angela Merkel, but it didn't help Greece. And it hasn't helped the underlying sovereignty of the underlying solvency of Greece. And the same is true of Spain. And of course, the other country that's been in a terrible way is Italy. Italy has barely seen any GDP growth for 20 years. Its economy has stagnated. Its young people are struggling to find jobs. It's in a terrible way. And of course, the debt levels in Italy are now clicking up. They're almost reaching 150% of GDP. And we are now looking at a very dangerous situation in Italy, with Italy in total lockdown. How is it going to fund its budget? How is it going to go on servicing those enormous debts? Impossible to see. But whenever Italian political system seems to be attempting to challenge the EU combine that imposes these policies on Italy, two things happen. Firstly, in the case of Silvio Berlusconi, as I will never forget, back in 2012, he was engineered out of power in what was in effect an EU-sponsored coup. And of course, we've seen just recently with Matteo Salvini that the EU basically and the political system in Italy have attempted to sideline him, and he's now facing criminal charges. In the meantime, we had Mr. Draghi at the European Central Bank. He was also doing all the things that central bankers do in these situations, which is printing money to try to keep the whole thing afloat. So there's never been solidarity. There's never been any real sense of unity within EU states. What it has been a system for transferring funds from the periphery, from countries like Italy, Spain, Greece, Portugal, Ireland, to the centre, to Germany and France, especially to Germany, in order to keep Germany going. So the EU provides, in effect, a market for German goods. And can I just add something else, which a lot of people don't realize? I mean, the EU distributes money to member states through what are called structural funds. But these structural funds, which are to build roads, to build bridges, to build all of those things, always come with conditions. And usually they come with conditions that, you know, companies from Germany or France will fill the contracts. So it recycles money also that way. So you have a situation where funds have drained from the periphery to the center. And by the way, I'm going to say something else. This is not good for the German people either. It has meant that Germany has become complacent and it's lost its cutting edge. And you're a person who is more involved in tech issues than I am, Alex. I think you will agree that Germany is falling behind in the tech race. I mean, you don't see big German internet companies. You don't see German software companies, as you should have seen, given Germany's enormous engineering strengths.
No, I mean, Germany has suffered as well, tremendously from Angela Merkel's policies.
Absolutely.
And in the past, from what I can remember, the past 10 years of EU rule, going from Juncker to Tusk, and now you have Draghi, and now you have, you went from bad to worse. Now you have van der Leyen and Christine Lagarde. Christine Lagarde and van der Leyen, are you telling me these are the people that are going to lead us out of this COVID-19 crisis? You got to be effing kidding me. You got to be absolutely kidding me that these are the two people that are going to lead us out of this pandemic.
Well, they're not.
But the other thing that they've done to Europe, they've done to the Germans. They tried to do it to the British. They've done it to the Irish. They've done it to the Italians, to the Greeks. They tried to do it to the Hungarians. They tried to do it to the Poles. Schengen, open borders. So not only have they destroyed us economically, all these idiots in Brussels, but they've hollowed out our countries. At least they've tried to hollow out our culture, our history, with this open border madness. And it's this open border madness that has ramped up much of this virus. It's just a fact. It's a fact. They stuck with this Schengen ideology.
Which they're not prepared to compromise on. That was the other thing that was really quite extraordinary. I mean, in the situation where they were facing the pandemic and people moving around Europe, for all we know, carrying the coronavirus, again, the leaders of the major states, Germany and France, are standing behind Schengen. They're not prepared to compromise on that at all. Of course, what we're actually seeing is that more and more EU states, member states, are now in open rebellion against this. So Austria is closing its borders, Poland, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, all of those sort of countries are now just going ahead and doing it anyway.
Countries and with a sense of sovereignty.
Well, indeed. And countries which have completely different ideas about and whose people have different expectations about what government should do. The EU has not authorized them to do this. They're just doing it, as far as I can understand. So what
every
we're
man
also
for seeing, himself.
So exactly. So what we're seeing is that this virus is exposing, firstly, the reality of the EU, which is, as I said, it's not about solidarity. All this talk about solidarity that we hear all the time, it doesn't mean anything. And at the same time, the system is cracking because more and more governments are being forced to do what they have to do in a situation like this, which is impose control of their borders. And we're going to see that proliferate. I predict it's going to spread. I mean, it's only a question of time before even Germany, in my opinion, moves in that direction. And then, of course, an EU with no borders, with internal borders again, is no longer the EU that we have known.
Alexander,
if that's the situation, bear in mind there's no proper government controlling all of these things. If there's internal borders, how can you have a currency that covers all? It begins to look completely mismatched and asymmetric, and at that point I think the cracks become not just cracks, they become gaping holes. Carry on.
That's exactly where I wanted to take this, and you beat me to it, Alexander. I'm looking at an article right now from Tom Lungo. The real crisis starts now in Europe. That's the title. I'm going to read you the first paragraph, and then I'll read you the last couple of paragraphs, and then you can put the whole thing in context, because I think you've nailed down why this may be the beginning of the end for this horrible, horrible idea and experiment called the European Union. Anyway, here's the first paragraph. I think it's safe to say the new crisis just killed the Schengen Treaty, that ridiculous document which guaranteed freedom of movement across the European Union, finally hit something it couldn't bully, COVID-19. Now I'm going to move down towards the end, Alexander. The next stage of this crisis is here, with the focus finally turning to Europe. The U.S., for all its faults, is one nation with a unified debt market and an executive who can and has exercised powers necessary to keep the wheels from completely falling off the U.S. economy. Will Trump spend money he doesn't actually have? Yes. So what? That money will go into a logistical pipeline that far outstrips Europe's to combat a disease over a smaller population spread across larger distances. That limits the damage to the U.S. It ensures political stability that the EU cannot hope to compete with for the trust of spooked capital. And the global economy grinding to a halt, we'll see the crisis emerge in Europe to feed a widening gyre of debt servicing that will look like a global bank run on dollar liquidity. It will force fundamental reform of the euro and the ECB. They are necessary for the EU to survive the crisis in anything close to its current form. I'm not laying odds that it will work. Instead, I expect Schengen's suspension to hold and more countries to go the way of the Brits by exiting the EU itself. While the crisis is tailor-made to shove the federalization of Europe down the throats of what's left of the German middle class, I don't think it succeeds. Until Germany is willing to bail out Italian banks, there is no solution to this. And while I think Merkel is willing to fall on her sword to get this done, it may still not work.
I don't think it's going to work. I'm quite sure that Tom Longo is right about this. I think the idea that people in Germany are going to be prepared to bail out Italy with its massive debts. I mean, we're not talking about Greek level of debt. We're talking about something, many magnitudes greater. I just don't see that happening. I mean, bear in mind, we're talking about a situation where the IF debt is now a powerful force within Germany and where the whole mood in Germany is hardening increasingly against Germany continuing to be involved in these kind of bailouts. And of course, if the Germans start imposing controls on their borders, which I predict they will, they'll be even less incentivized to bail out places like Italy. So I agree with Tom Luongo's analysis, but I have to say the pessimistic scenario seems to me the more logical one. The one thing I will say about the EU is that it has a disastrous ability to keep going. I mean, it's something that we mustn't underestimate the extent to which it's able somehow to patch itself together and just, you know, clank on down the road, creating ever more havoc and ever more disaster.
Until
the next crisis. Partly it's because it's been so effective and successful in hollowing out genuine political leadership. We've seen this in, we were discussing this at the start of this program, that there's no strong leadership at the center and there's no strong leadership in the member states, at least not the key member states. Not Italy, not Germany, not France. I mean, you can find strong leaders in places like Hungary and Poland, but you will not find them in Germany, France, or Italy, at least not at the moment. But having said that, when faced by a crisis of this magnitude, I struggle to believe that the EU will just be able to clank on for much longer. I mean, what happens if Italy is no longer able to service those debts? If we see a meltdown in the Italian banking system, which is much talked about.
What
does she do? I mean, it's a very good, question. I mean, Draghi, of course, he said that, you know, he would do whatever it takes, and he went in for massive QE, and the European Central Bank now has negative interest rates. I was, as you will remember, back in the summer in Germany, and I remember how unhappy people in Germany were about negative interest rates. I mean, what damage it was doing to the overall fiber and structure of the German financial system, that the, you know, Germany had to accept these negative interest rates. I think if Christine Lagarde turns around and says, well, I'm going to do even more QE on an even bigger scale. I mean, she's sort of said that, but I mean, on a very much bigger scale, I think there will come a point where the Germans will say no. I mean, I think there will be such a strong reaction in Germany that even Merkel would have to say no in that sort of situation. Now, the Germans have talked about, you know, you know, they've got this big fiscal bazooka. You know, they're a country that's saved, that's fairly disciplined in how it spends money. So they've got a great deal of fiscal leeway. But can that extend to covering the whole of Europe? Of course not. And would the German people accept that? Would they be willing to see their savings and their, you know, used for such a purpose, and their taxes rise, or their government, you know, going to massive borrowing in order to bail out Italy? I can't really see it happening. So I think in this kind of situation, when faced with this kind of crisis, I think that ultimately we are going to see within weeks, or we're going to start to see European Monetary Union, the euro and all that, starting to break down.
A lot has changed, Alexander, since, you know, the crisis with Greece, Cyprus and Spain and Italy and Ireland, and Portugal, the pigs back then, that crisis.
Yeah.
A lot has changed in the fact that we do have a lot of different leadership in Europe. You have Kurz, you have Orban, you have Duda, you have now, and you may touch upon it now, a rising Salvini. He will become leader of Italy much sooner, I think, rather than later.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be a major force to reckon with. And then you have, of course, the UK and Brexit. Mm. And a lot has changed. How does that factor into what's going on now? And Merkel has been weakened. And you have a Macron who's completely, you know, head in the clouds. So there's a lot of different dynamics now. And this is a much bigger challenge.
Yes,
than
it
what
is.
It was. You know,
I mean, this is on an entirely different scale, because let's first of all start with Italy. Let's talk about Salvini. And this is the crisis for which Salvini is made, in effect. I mean, he's the person who's always been skeptical, if not just skeptical. He's been completely disbelieving in this whole theory of EU solidarity. He's been proved right. He's the person who said Italy needs to take charge of its affairs. He's been proved right again. He's the person who tried to control Italy's borders and is facing criminal charges because he tried to do that. He's been proved right a further time. This is a crisis that's made for him. If he can't capitalize on it, I mean, I can't imagine how he can't capitalize on it. He is bound to rise. And I predict very soon, because I don't think this government in Italy, for all I'm hearing, is actually coping with this situation very well. I mean, I was even reading somewhere recently that you know, the policy now, the quiet policy now, is to leave 70-year-old people, the people who are most vulnerable in Italy, you know, basically to live or die by themselves. I mean, it's just astonishing. And it shows a total abdication of leadership and government in this kind of situation. So, you know, I can't imagine that the people of Italy, faced with this sort of situation, are not going to turn to the only person who speaks or gives the impression that he might be a strong leader. Now, you know, whether he will turn out to be a strong leader, I don't know. But that's how he projects himself to the Italian people. He's the most popular politician in Italy by far. And I would have thought, as I said, this is a crisis made for him. But you're quite right. Salvini is important because Italy, with Britain gone, is now one of the big three. If Italy is led by a Eurosceptic, that totally changes the dynamic. But of course, increasingly, so are all the other EU states also. I mean, you know, at least the East Europeans have become very disillusioned. I mean, the EU has been beating up Poland. They don't like what the Law and Justice Party has been doing in Poland. They don't like Mr. Orban in Hungary either. They've been calling him a dictator and an anti-Semite and all these sort of things. It's a situation.
In Austria, what they did in Austria.
Austria with Kurz too. This situation is now one where Merkel, who back in 2011-12 was the unchallenged, undisputed queen of Europe, who was, you know, able to get everybody together, carry out the plan, impose all these bailouts. She doesn't have that kind of authority anymore. She doesn't have that kind of authority in the EU. She doesn't have that kind of authority in Germany either. And of course, quite apart from anything else, there are going to be lots of people, especially in Germany, who would say, if anything like that were tried again, why do this again when it failed before? I mean, we're back in the same crisis that we were in 2012. Why assume if we sort it out again this time in the same way that we did in 2012, that it won't come back with a vengeance in the future? Because I think this is the other point, and I predict more and more people are going to be making this. The problem with the coronavirus, I mean, there's all these people who say, you know, the coronavirus is, you know, this extraordinary thing that has come and nobody's prepared for it. What the coronavirus has done is it's exposed the underlying structural problems in the EU that have always been there. I find it's very interesting that Tom Longo makes exactly the same point as we've made on other programs, which is, however dysfunctional and disorganized the response in the United States initially appears to be, the United States still has, in fact, it absolutely has, a functioning government and a functioning administrative system. The United States will control this thing in a way that Europe simply cannot. And, you know, in a couple of weeks down the line, that's going to become ever more glaring and ever more obvious. Now, given what I was saying previously, that I don't think the drive to greater centralization or federalization is possible. And as I said, we are seeing states already going their own way. Surely the logic points to some kind of major breakup.
Sooner than you think?
I would have thought sooner. I mean, you know,
it was coming. It was coming. It was going to break up. Of course, 5, 10 years. But now, what do you think?
Of course. Well, I mean, much sooner. I'm not going to put a date on it because, of course, that depends a lot on the virus, and I don't know how that's going to play out. And it also depends on what happens in the financial markets. But this has massively weakened the credibility of the EU system, because people in Italy, looking to the EU, once again, what they see is the EU is not the solution. It's the problem. It's actually making things worse. It can't organize resistance to the coronavirus. And it can't help Italy in this major crisis. On the contrary, it is preventing Italy from doing the kind of things it needs to do, because it's hollowed out the political system in Italy, weakened its internal structures, and put its economy, Italy's economy, in a situation of total stop, stasis, as we say in Greece, for 20 years, which has also in turn hollowed it out. So people in Italy are going to be saying that. People in Spain are going to be saying that. I think before very long, more and more people in Germany are going to be saying that too. And of course, in France, where we have all the protests all the time, there's even been protests going on at the moment. I mean, you know, the Gilets Jaunes, exactly. The Yellow Vests actually came out and protested in Paris on Saturday. I mean, they defied the restrictions to make it clear how angry they still are, how angry they, in fact, absolutely are. So, you know, we are seeing, it seems to me, the moment when it's been shown that the emperor has no clothes, that he has that you know, it's just not really a functioning thing anymore.
I was just going to say the same exact thing. Whether you believe the virus is real or not, or if it's very dangerous or not dangerous at all. I don't think that's the point in this video, at least, what we're talking about right now. What this virus has done is that it has exposed the EU as being a complete racket.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, it goes in all this, you know, high-flown rhetoric, you know, all these people who talk about, you know, Europe and civilization and all that kind of thing. But as I said, the practical reality of it has been terrible. It's been terrible. And, you know, I want to come back to this. I mean, you know, we're not talking about cooperation between EU states. That's fine. But this kind of superstructure that has emerged over the last 30 years has been a calamity. It's been a calamity for the people of Europe. And it's been, and we're seeing it now. It continues on its own momentum, but it is simply not doing the things it was meant to do.
All the smart people in Brussels are just a bunch of dummies.
Well, you take the words out of my mouth. I mean, you know, does anybody really expect these people? As you said, the Christine Lagarde. Well, Christine Lagarde, actually, I mean, she actually came out and said, you know, it's not the job of these European Central Bank to help Italy with its, you know, with its spreads, you know, the problems with it servicing its debt, which at this particular moment in time, the Italian people didn't need to hear, it seems to me. I mean, you don't actually come out and make a statement like that at a time like this. I mean, I happen to agree with Christine Lagarde. You should not be bailing out countries, and you should not be bailing out, you know, the banks in those countries. You should be, if a country is insolvent, it should be allowed to go bankrupt, to default, renegotiate with its creditors, and come to, you know, intelligent arrangements with them, as has always been done. Not have this thing where the debt is, you know, recycled all the time and just accumulates because of all these bizarre bailouts, which simply make the situation, the underlying situation, ever worse. I will say, by the way, I mean, you know, I made lots of criticisms of him. Varoufakis wrote an article for The Guardian in which he made exactly the same point. He said, ultimately, you know, that this is before the coronavirus really started, that, you know, people talk about a recovery in Greece, but the recovery cannot ever really take hold because all that debt is still there and it's getting bigger because you can't liquidate it because you're not allowed to. You can't default on it because you're not able to default on it. So people in that kind of situation still lend to you. You still borrow. Your debt burden rises, even though you can't ultimately service it. It doesn't make any sort of sense. And the sooner a stop is put to it, the better. But for Lagarde to come around and say that now, where people in Italy are locked in their homes, where some people apparently are running out of food and basic supplies, and when 70-year-old people in Italy are going to be left to live or die by themselves, well, it was a terrible thing to say. And it shows, again, the total absence of leadership at the EU centre.
Why should Lagarde care? She's not Italian. Why should Merkel care about Greece? She's not Greek. No. That's my point. These people, they're not vested into these countries that have, and every country has problems. These people that are ruling over these countries, the Lagardes and the Merkels and the van der Leyens, what do they care about Spain? What do they care about Italy? What do they care about Ireland? What do they care about Portugal? They don't. They're globalists. Don't. They don't care.
Well, indeed.
Angela, they're not going to solve problems like that, especially ones like this.
Yeah, Angela Merkel is elected by the German people. She has some kind of connection
for Germany.
Christine Lagarde, all those people at the European Commission, all those sort of people, they're not ultimately accountable to anybody. They are simply accountable, if you like, to certain institutions. There's no actual... You can't vote them out of power. I can't vote Christine Lagarde out of power. I can't vote Ursula von Leyen out of power. It's impossible to do that. And that puts them in a completely different situation to anybody who, you know, belongs to who is incorporated within a state system. I mean, Donald Trump made the point that he's actually, as the elected president of the United States, he has the power to sack Jerome Powell. He could do that. He didn't say he would do it, but he can do it. The United States has a government which is accountable, at least in theory, to the people through the electoral process. The European Union doesn't have a government in that sense. And as you rightly say, ultimately, Christine Lagarde is not interested in Italy. She's interested in the viability of the institutions which employ her and pay her a very, very big salary.
All right, Alexander, interesting video. Guys, hit that like button, subscribe. YouTube is unsubscribing us all the time. They're demonetizing us.
They don't like it. Yeah, they don't like it.
Anyway, donate to us. Help us out, guys. We really need your help, Alexander.
Yeah.
Any words?
We will be keeping it all. We will be keeping it all very careful eye on what happens, and we do want to know a lot of what people are experiencing in places like Italy and wherever. Italy, especially. I mean, a beautiful country, one of the most cultured country in so many ways in Europe, and it's terrible to see it in this state. And you know, we'd like to know what people in Italy are experiencing directly.
All right, guys. That's it. Any promotion, or we'll leave it
there?
Oh,
well, it's a sad time. We'll leave it.
Let's leave it there. All right. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Take care.